Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we've got a couple of stragglers today.
Okay.
Working their way in. Is Donna on the line? Guess not.
Not yet. I think you're it. So how is Supernova going?
Doing the call.
Okay. It's definitely going. It's been more positive responses than negatives, but we've had a couple of comments to some of it, but I think more often than not, it's pretty positive.
Sometimes the negative comments may be signals that there's an issue, and that can be helpful too, you know.
Yeah, one of our clients that I would classify as a butler, because he's the father of a younger client that's accumulating, but both of them together would be butlers combined, would be the ideal client.
Mm-hmm.
When we sent the folder, he's like, you know, this Morgan Stanley sheet, what is this? If I give you $300,000 and I get this folder, like, he didn't. So he didn't really, he, you know, I helped overcome some of the objections, just explaining the process and why this will be hopefully a better and easier way to organize, you know, our meetings and have dedicated time to talk, et cetera. But he thought that the general information page was kind of BS. That was his feedback. But he's the only one that said that part.
You know, sometimes people that are underachievers in terms of accumulation have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And therefore, they don't make good clients. You know, they're always feeling as though they their money is too much. You know, a lot of times when people don't have enough money, they worry so much about their money. And it's not worth it. It isn't usually the clients that have a lot of money that are in the trouble.
He doesn't seem to worry about it, and he really doesn't withdraw very often. He's like, I'm a simple person. I just like to see where it was and where I am now. And I'm just explaining that part of that performance review will tell him exactly that. But it was just the feedback that he was probably more direct with his feedback than any other client that we've had about it.
Interesting, yeah. Well, I always tell people, I said, you know, we used to send big leather binders out, and nobody'd ever use them. So if you lose one of these, we can, for $5, we can replace it. So it's something, it's a useful tool, not something that you're going to put on the shelf and never use again. And that's what happens with the big leather binders. Everybody is afraid of them, you know. It's like, I don't want to write in it. I don't, you know. This is not an indication of your worth. This is an indication. This is a tool. It's something that you take to a meeting.
Okay.
So do we have a quorum, or are we still waiting?
We've got Dimitri, Sarah, and I are on the line.
Is John
Allen? I don't know. He's on the email.
He didn't get back.
That's
right. Yeah. No, I'm about to start. As long
as he knows
that we're taking the call.
Yeah.
So we'll follow along. He's just waiting to find out.
So what's on your mind this week?
No.
Everything?
No, we're in the process of, we're trying to focus more on the local clients and you know, making sure that everyone that we're planning to keep has that first initial meeting so we can do a review, introduce the new process to them, and go through the folders. So we've been working on that, and I feel like it's been harder to do, I feel like it's been harder to get through the list locally than it has been being like Seattle, because Seattle, you know, you let people know that you're coming in town, and it's almost like an excuse to get together, and everybody's motivated really to get together, and then, you know, here we're on the, you know, we're on the phones with people, we're trying to schedule, like, you know, the meetings to come in, you know, life happens, work it kind of gets in the way for a lot of other people, so the volume hasn't been as high as when we had the intent to go to Seattle, but we're kind of getting through the list, even with the smaller relationships that we're planning to keep, you know, at least we're making contacts with some folks. But I don't know, that's what's been on my mind.
Okay.
I think getting through the folder piece and then that explanation, and usually when we're having our reviews, there's additional action items and updates that we're having to do at the same time, so it eventually will be pretty systematic and quick when we do these, but right now we're kind of, every time we have a review, it's probably about 8 other action items to do following it. So it's good for the client, but it's definitely time consuming for us, but they're worth it. I mean, these are some of our best clients, so.
Well, the good news is there's business that's coming out of those, you know, meetings that we had. And from a growth production standpoint, we're like right on track with where we were last year. And we segmented, go ahead, Steph.
From the revenue standpoint, we gave away one relationship out of the larger book that we've been tracking how we're doing against last year. But we've had some clients that our former partner solicited to retain, so they've actually left our book. So it wasn't by our direction, but it's been segmenting some of those clients off. I think we've got our consolidated list of the people we now are looking to reassign that haven't either left for the advisor that's already at our firm or gone to a new firm. We had one that wasn't a great fit that wanted to go to Fisher Investments, who we all probably see on TV, but that we weren't that worried about it.
But it was a little bit of a surprise because we showed them the folders. They liked what they saw. They liked what they heard. And then we scheduled our first update call with them. And then, you know, they kind of surprised us and said that they were going another direction. So, you know, but it wasn't the ideal client anyways. They've just been with my dad really from the start. They're not in a geographic location that really makes sense for us. And from the client is hard of hearing, and in all reality, it wasn't really the best fit. But it was hard to see. I thought it was kind of a bummer to see him go.
Yeah, I mean, it's never easy, but anyway, so generally you'd say that revenues are making up for the lost business because you're getting more business from some existing clients because of more contact, right?
I would say the market has probably been a larger piece of it. We've got new business in the pipeline as a result of the meetings we've had, but that additional business hasn't really closed yet. So it's probably more by nature of the market and a lot of our fee-based business growing, where it's,
good. You
know, in spite of what's going out the door, we're still kind of right in line with where we were last year without having segmented out as many clients as we plan to.
Right.
And if our sole purpose was to create our ideal business and not look at revenues, then you'd be moving in that direction, correct?
To how many clients we want to work with, you mean?
Well, even more than that. Like, if we had a magic wand and could create the perfect business, doing business with the right people to fit our practice. The right size, but also the right temperament. And that's kind of the ideal people, the ideal client. I mean, that's part of why people hire us. It's sort of gotten past the idea of survival. And now are interested in having a business that they will enjoy and enjoy the people and have some balance in their life and not go crazy trying to chase their tail. And so when you lose a client like that, even though it's hard, it isn't, you know, according to what you just said, Dimitri, it's not the best fit. So in all, as time goes on, you'll see that the practice is more of an ideal practice, which frankly you guys deserve. You can have that. You know, you can have your ideal practice. You don't have to do business with jerks, and you don't have to do business with people that don't value you.
Mm-hmm. That's and the that, ideal.
Yeah, I think we're...
No, and we were Stephanie and I were having this conversation yesterday. About the people that we've met with, engaged, have onboarded into the new process, and have them like on our schedule for their, you know, regular meetings. Like, it's great. It's we want to get to that faster, but there are situations where, you know, you're trying to communicate the new servicing that we're offering to all the clients. We haven't been able to tell everybody yet, so we're just working through it, and that's kind of been my a little bit of a frustration is, you know, you can't really control, because, you know, you're just trying to deal with those people's schedules. But it's really nice once you sit down, you engage them, you get them on board, and then plug them in. It's been really nice. So those who are plugged in, it's great. It's just, you know, continuing to get through everybody so that everybody's plugged in. And, you know.
Right.
Yep. Rob, do you have some suggestions for, like, I know Lisa, the scheduler, talked about coming up with your ideal day, which I think we've done that for the most part. But we do have some clients that are used to meeting later, and some of them prefer that because they're on a different time zone. Do mm-hmm. you recommend that we try to have them conform to our ideal days and deal with that, or how do you recommend we block out those people?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you can get them into your ideal day, it's kind of like a surgeon that does business in the morning. You know, he does his surgery at 6 o'clock in the morning till, you know, till he's done 11 o'clock or something. And then you'll see patients in the afternoon or do rounds or do whatever he needs to do. You can explain to people that this is, you know, what you're doing. And these are the times that are available. And people get used to that, you know. They know that doctor's appointments aren't always available. Neither are hair appointments. So sometimes they have to adjust to the professional. And so my attempt would be to get them, would be tell them when the appointments are available, which of these would you like. And most people are genuinely nice and will say, I'll take 11 o'clock, you know. They won't say, well, what happened to my 4 o'clock? Okay, so I would explain what you're doing, why you're doing it, how you're doing it, and that these are the times that are available, which would you like? And give them, you know, give them several options. you know, Tuesday, Thursday, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday at between 10 and 12, which would you like? And they go, oh, I'll take Tuesday would work. And they'll say, you know, I have bridge on this day and I have that, so I can't do that, but I can do this. So, you know, people that aren't working that are retired, and then other people that are working will let you know what works and what doesn't work. But I would always try and fit them into my day. Just because it's going to make it so much nicer for you. I mean, I fit people into my day, and you know what? Everybody seems to be okay with it. I mean, I've never had anybody say, well, if you're going to do that, I'm not going to do business with you. Right? I work. This is unusual Tuesday because I had a golf tournament yesterday, but normally it's Monday and Wednesday that I have classes and that's it. You know, I don't do it. I don't, you know, my other days are other things. And you guys are okay with that. I just think it's confidence. You know, you just have to have confidence that what you're offering is of value and that this is really a training issue. This is what you're retraining your clients. And so you'll get some pushback, but you know what? That's okay. What else? What other questions?
Yeah, that's what I've found. A couple of clients that I've talked to, you know, they're used to doing business a certain way, and you try to introduce something new to them, and they're like, well, you know, that's great, you know, that's fine, whatever, send me whatever it is, and we'll set it up. They're just kind of like, it's just an added thing to them. Maybe they're not used to it, or they don't, like, latch on to the value. And it's just kind of, you have to work with them to get them comfortable in doing it. And there's some people who really latch on and, like, really love and see a lot of value and buy in, like, right off the bat. There's a couple of people that I've dealt with that have just, you know, they're not, blown away by it. And they're just kind of like, yeah, okay, that's fine. You know, do whatever it is you want. And, you know, they just kind of go about their day. It's just kind of, is that normal? You know?
Yeah. Very normal.
Like 100% buy-in.
And the point is, look, you guys, you know, you didn't understand. Remember my five times rule in terms of introducing a new idea? It takes five times, right? We went through that the last time. It's the same thing. You know, you guys didn't understand the value of Supernova. You did enough to buy in and do it, right? But until you introduce it to clients and they go, wow, this is fabulous, not all of them, but enough, say it's great. Then you go, you know what? This is good. This is differentiating me. This makes me better. It makes me, I have more confidence. I have a better practice. I have something unusual, different to sell. And therefore, this is a good idea, right? So it took you a while. It's going to take them a while, a few phone calls. And then they'll start to get into the routine and they'll figure out, oh, this is good. I like this. He's answering my questions. You know, he's there. When I have a question, I just save it in my folder, and then I ask the question, and I get the answer. I don't call and not get a call back and play phone tag and blah, 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 like I used to with my other advisors. You know, this is much better. So, yes, it's an experience they need to have in order to value. Some people value it immediately. They can see the value. Others take them a little while. Now, that brings us to our 24-month calendar, which we're introducing this week. And this is another way of creating value. Because what you want to do is you want to make sure clients understand that this is not another chance to sell them an annuity. Okay, this is a educational process, 1242, service process, process for helping them to understand their financial future, their financial life, through their financial plan, make the necessary changes, anticipate change, and be in contact. Actually get them better performance, too, because you're paying more attention to them. But the 24-month calendar is actually introducing 8 new products or services while you introduce 12 other calendar-driven events. So over 24 months, we're introducing 12 topics, one every 2 months, so you get time. So you may introduce the idea of efficient use of debt, okay? In that month, you might talk about lines of credit, mortgages, credit card debt, margin, and which is the most efficient use of debt for what issues, what events. They'd love that. That's a big help. So you need to prepare for that. So you want to be prepared with everybody on the team, go through some training. You can do it with conference calls. You can do it however you want. But you know what? You need to know what interest rates are. You want your mortgage department prepared. If you're going to do 10 mortgages that month, you want to be able to have them ready for it. So that's just a good example. When you're doing required minimum distributions, you want to be prepared. You want to do some self-training. And then you want to educate your clients, and then you want to follow through. But this gives you, now some people publish this and actually give it to their clients. I recommend that now. And I recommend it because even if you don't stick to it 100%, it tells them what is going to be happening. Kind of like looking at the calendar and saying, oh, this is coming in that month. I can't wait. You know, we're going to learn about mortgages in May or whatever. And it helps you stick with the calendar so you can't fudge it. You know, you're not going to skip things. Just makes you look really organized, too.
Yeah. Which I just have a question. So in practice, how religious do you follow this? I mean, I think it's great because I love like the seasonality of it, and it shows you that you have a plan and meeting with it. But then you get to like a topic with long-term care, and you know, for your younger clients or who long-term care, it might be a long time before they start to even consider that as an option that they might need. Like, do we need to have a conversation with them about it to educate, or, you know, is it just kind of, there as a guideline so you can kind of talk to it, maybe have some points, and then, you know, move on to...
I always like to let the client determine that. And the reason is, you may, let's use the example of mortgages back to that. You may say, well, the client doesn't even have a mortgage. Why should I bring that up? Because they have children, right? They have grown children in their 40s who are moving from one city to another, and their ability to become the mortgage company may be an option. Or helping your children to get a mortgage through Morgan Stanley might be a very good option. So even though it's not, in your case, a long-term care, you have a client in their 30s, their parents are in their 60s, this may be about their parents, not about them. Should the parents consider long-term care? And what are the options? How do you finance it? And what's it look like? What are the economics of it? Who offers it? Is it practical? It's an education experience. So it's good for you to know it, and it's good for them to be able to understand it. You may introduce it 1 year, have absolutely no relevance, you just give them a brief outline of it. The next year, it's more relevant, they really want to know about it. But they know that you sell it. They know you sell it, and they don't go to your insurance agent and get ripped off with some stupid plan that isn't as good as what you can offer.
For the clients that already have it, do you suggest we keep the topic that month and just do like a review like we would for annuities? Or?
Absolutely. I think it's a terrific idea. I think people that have long-term care have got a lot of questions, and I think you facing those questions and dealing with it and helping them to understand what they own is brilliant. Because nobody talks about their annuity. You know, they sell them an annuity, and that's it. And then they get people, you know, hear about the annuities aren't any good or this or that. You go back and re-enter it, introduce it, tell them why they bought it, why it makes sense, how it's working. And they're like, I'm good. I'm glad. So you get rid of all the anxiety. See, our job, in truth, is to help our clients be anxiety-free. And by doing what you're doing, you're moving in that direction. By them knowing when you're calling, that it's a scheduled appointment, knowing that you actually have an agenda, and then you send them an executive summary. Think about all the anxiety that you just eliminated. Just by having a monthly call. It's amazing. So if your job truly was to make your clients feel less anxious about the world, you're doing a heck of a good job with Supernova.
Okay.
So one of the things I wrote down was we were going to cover the five-step process for creating centers of influence. Do you want to go through that?
Sure.
Okay. So the reason, you know, we used to just say go see a CPA and get him to, you know, become a center of influence for you. And people say, well, you know, it's not quite that easy. So what I did was sort of help study what people did in actuality. Who are the people that built the great centers of influence that changed their lives and changed their practices? And truly, if you get one good CPA that refers business to you regularly, that can change your business. My brother had one. And she changed his life. I mean, I would say 50% of his business came from her. You should tell me about it. You know, one day she called and said, you know, I have such and such who's going to open an account with you. And she said, I've never even met the guy. And she said, don't worry, I told him about you. And he's got $30 million, and he's going to open the account. And he transferred in $33 million. Became one of his best clients. So it's really worth it. But teaching people why it's worth it when they have never had one is really hard, okay, because they think, oh, my God, I can't, it's not worth it to go into all that work. But it is, if, in fact, you do it well and you get the right person. So the five-step process is simply building a real relationship with that person, becoming friends, opening their account eventually, hopefully sooner than later, and taking what might take 10 years or 20 years and move it down to a year, right? So, yeah, because the people that do this and do it well, I ask them, how long did it take you to develop that relationship? Oh, 5 years, 10 years. I'm like, we don't have 5 years. We don't have 10 years. You're going to do it in less than a year. So how would you do that if you didn't have an extra 5 or 10 years to hope somebody will come around? Well, you find the person by asking the questions, can you enthusiastically endorse, and we'll stick with CPAs for this point. Can you enthusiastically endorse your CPA? Yes, yes, yes. He's great. If you get five people saying he's great, that's somebody you want to meet, right? You go and meet him, and you see if it's a match. See if it's a good person. See if you like him, too. And if it is, your next step is to meet his people, right? And you tell him that, okay? And you go through these steps and say, look, this is what I'd like to do. I'd like to meet. It's like meeting their parents, right? I want to meet your parents. You come and meet my parents. I want to go meet your team. I want to know who is touching our clients. That's a great line, by the way. I want to know who's touching our clients. And he goes, oh, okay, you guys care. All right. So you meet all the people that are going to touch the client. Meaning I'm trusting you with these clients. I have to meet these people. So you go meet them, and what you're trying to do in this meeting is to get to know their staff. You can take your staff with you and meet their staff. But the most important thing is to understand what it is that they do, how they do it, why they do it, who's their ideal client. You know, what do they specialize in? Because all CPAs are far from the same. I mean, they're very different. And then you have them come back and meet your team. And I suggest that you have a meeting around the conference room table, and you set it up based on the five-star model, and everybody reports in on what you do and how you do it based on the five-star model. Okay? I'm the director of financial planning, and this is what we do. I'm the director of implementation. This is what I do. I'm the director of brand management. This is what I do. I'm the director of marketing. This is what I do. And I'm the director of leadership, and this is what I do. You'll be totally impressed, okay? You'll blow them away. And then you have your third meeting, so 1, 2, 3, 4, your fourth meeting is you meet with them and you explain the enthusiastically endorsed model in a one-on-one. So the first meeting where they get to know you and see if it's a good match. The second meeting is in their place. The third meeting is in your place. The fourth meeting is teaching them in the enthusiastically endorsed model. Why? Because they're going to say, you know, I'm not sure I can get you the introductions that you want. And you say, well, this is how we get introductions for you. We ask everybody this question, can you enthusiastically endorse your CPA? And when they say, no, I'm looking for a new one, then we introduce them to three people, and you would be one of them. And they say, well, we'll be...
Oh, sorry to interject. Just kind of a success story. I was sitting with Anne-Marie Jacko the other day, and she listed her CPA with Neil Ryder. Mm-hmm. She said no. She said, no, I want a new one. So
mm-hmm.
I was like, yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt you.
There's a CPA that we don't find.
We don't like
very,
a lot.
Very easy to work with. And yeah, there's two, but one has come up more often than the other, and when Dimitri asked the client if she could endorse that particular CPA, she said, no, I want a new one.
But the bad thing was, Brian was the one that referred her to him. And she was like, oh,
wow,
refer me to this guy. I know. I'm like, we don't want
to. Okay. All right. So there's a perfect example, okay? Now, he introduced her to you. So you've got a vested interest in helping him, right?
Yeah.
No, that client was introduced to that particular CPA by an advisor that used to be a part of his team and left the business. So we have no association with that, CPA.
Okay. So you're okay.
Not send us any business.
Okay, good. All right, fine. That's a different situation. You know what I was going to say. Yeah, you need to go and help that CPA stop being a jerk, right?
Yeah.
If in fact he is.
Yeah, we've been to on site and met with him face to face with one of our other clients. He's a jerk. Yeah, he's a jerk.
It's just, yeah.
Well, that's an opportunity because there's a lot of clients that he does business with that need new CPAs. So you guys can, I don't know, maybe there's a group that was referred to him. There's some affiliation, and that person knows other people doing business with him. And you could displace quite a bit of business then. That'd be good. Okay. So that's the fourth meeting. And the fifth meeting is your first meeting where you're actually bringing value to him. Uh-huh. Will you hopefully bring an introduction to him? Okay? And you can bring him right to the meeting. And you want to have a separate folder for that CPA other than his client folder. And that is dedicated to that relationship. You want to have in there introductions given and introductions received. An agenda for each meeting, what you're going to cover, what's important, what's changed, what's hot in the tax law, everything. But your purpose is to give him or her introductions. And I always recommend that you have three CPAs, one at bat, one on deck, and one in the dugout. And so I meet with the one that's at bat every month, just religiously, and then quarterly with the one on deck, and semi-annually with the one in the dugout. And you do this for the next 10 years, I'm telling you guys, we'll have a heck of a business.
Yeah, that's the one thing we're not fun on doing.
What?
Meeting with a COI every month. I've been with them a couple times, but
So Rob, how do we how long do we give it in terms of keeping them at bat or not, and reciprocation of the referral?
Well, by definition, a center of influence is a person who likes you, trusts you, and is willing to send introductions to you without you asking. Okay? So if it's the right choice and a right decision, you become friends, you're going to get introductions. That's what you do. And this isn't a casual thing where you're, you know, seeing them at a cocktail party or calling them once in a while. This is like having somebody on your team. This is like a person sitting next to you. It's the person that's working for you. Now, sometimes you're not number one. Sometimes you're number two because he's been doing business with somebody for a long time. But just like you, you introduce him to three different CPAs, he should be introducing clients to more than one financial advisor. And you explain to him why that makes sense. Okay?
Yep.
I mean, that really does make sense, by the way. There's no advantage to him to just send everybody to one person. If that one person turns out to be a bad boy, that's a really bad idea for him.
We've got one CPA that we like a lot that I think likes us in turn and has come to us a couple of times with people that weren't necessarily a good fit. So I recently articulated what we're doing and what we're looking for, not in person but over the phone, with the intention to do a follow-up meeting in person after tax time. But I don't know that we've gotten any actual business because the things that he's come to us with weren't good fit for us.
Right.
So I'm just kind of curious, like, if we go through this with him, who we really, I think, would like us to be one of our six COIs, how long do we give it before we put him in the dugout?
Well, first of all, go through the five-step meeting process.
You got to know
who his ideal client is. Who are his clients? Okay? If you don't know who his clients are, and they all turn out to be $300,000 accounts, he's the wrong guy.
Yeah, true.
That's why.
Yeah, that death goal is probably the one to lead.
Okay,
so I can't tell you how long you give it to get bad introductions. Okay? You give it no time. He does business with the wrong clients, and it's not his fault. It's just what he chose. So you want a good match. A group of people, a group of CPAs or a CPA that does business with people just like your clients. And that's why you go through that process. And had you gone through that process, you would be further ahead now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's why I tell people to do it. And they say, well, I don't want to go to all that trouble. Well, then it's not going to work for you then. You got to go see him and know who he does business with. Meet his people and see if this really is a good match. And have him meet your people and see if it's a good match. And he says, you know what? I don't have clients that meet your minimum. Well, good. Well, if you find somebody, we'd love to do business with them. So you don't make an enemy of him.
Right.
But you don't, he knows not, you don't, you can refer small accounts to him. But he's not going to refer small accounts to you. But you could find somebody for him. It should be a nice favor. And then when he finds a big account, he knows to send it to you.
We know that he's got some clients that are in our target area. I just don't know how many of them he has.
Right. He may not have enough. He may not, you know... It may not just be his thing. So that's the story, and that it isn't CPAs only now. Keep in mind it's lawyers, family attorneys, commercial realtors are fabulous. Business brokers. Okay, so this is what you want to do with 6 centers of influence, meet with them monthly. So this will keep you busy. I mean, this is a big marketing effort. But it will pay off.
6 COIs per advisor per month?
Correct. So think about how much more activity that would generate. I mean, How many are you meeting with now, monthly?
As needed.
Maybe one a month per FA, you know. Think about the volume. Just think about the volume of those meetings and what that's going to do in terms of opportunities by itself. That's just one of 7 initiatives that we have for you in terms of marketing. So if that's the only one you did, it would probably be enough to double your business.
Hey, Rob.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob.
Question on centers of influence. If we have a really good client that refers us, you know, maybe 1-2 every month, well, I mean 1 every 2 months or something, can we still consider them as a center of influence for us, a good client referral? Or that's a separate category?
Well, we have our professional centers of influence, and then we have our natural centers of influence.
Okay.
Our natural our natural centers of influence are the ones that are already there. We either got them through our profession, you know, we brought them with us from our previous job, or through a niche that we have. So when, you know, our second initiative is niche marketing, right? And then we have a center of influence inside that niche.
Okay.
So there's layers here that coincidentally, you know, fit in with other marketing efforts. But this is the topic for today, is just professional centers of influence.
Okay.
And those are people that intersect with clients that look like our clients all the time. And we can refer to them and they can refer to us. A natural center of influence might be the president of the university. We can't refer to him, but we can help him. We can help him in other ways. But he could be sending us somebody every month. You know, he could be fabulous. And therefore, you'd meet with him monthly. The point is that good centers of influence, the more attention you give them, the more they're going to help you. Because they like you and they trust you. So if you're
top of mind too.
Right, out of sight, out of business. We always say out of sight, out of business, you know. So the more you're top of mind, the more they're going to refer to you.
One of the questions that our partner that retired recently, he had asked for continuity. He said, I'm curious what your coach thoughts are on continuation of physical birthday cards and then gifts on either birthdays or year end. And I think we addressed the cards, but I don't know that we ever addressed the gifts. He used to send like golf balls to certain clients and, you know, nice, just different nice, interesting items, olive oil, candles, et cetera.
Well, let me ask you, for what purpose?
I think it's a nice thank you to the client for being a good relationship.
I mean, I'm big on reinforcing the behaviors you want. Right? So if somebody is the center of influence and they regularly send you clients, I don't think there's enough you can do for them. Okay? You mean they send you a $10 million client? What can you do? That's a lot of income. So sending them a gift, a thank you gift, you know, every time they do it, it's wonderful. I think that's just, I mean, I do business here with, I'm up in North Carolina, and I'm going to be visiting the NCAA championships of tennis.
Right. I played on the Wake Forest this year, right?
Yeah, I played for Wake Forest, and it's at Wake Forest this year, and we're ranked number one, so it's a really nice time to be going back. But their marketing person, for me, you know, they kind of assign a marketing person for each, you know, reasonably sized donor. He sends me things randomly, almost like every time I talk to him, you know. So I get a shirt, or I get a hat, or I get a, and I think that's great, you know. It's just a thoughtful thank you, and you appreciate it. If he knows that I'm interested in something, when I go up there, he takes a picture with us and sends a, you know, copy of the ticket and frame it and send it to me. So I think those things are lovely, okay? And it's reinforcing the behavior that he wants, right? He wants me to give him a bunch of scholarships and to give a lot of money. So it's a good thing. So, but just for doing business, I'm not sure it's, I like, you know, I mean, obviously he was very good at what he did. So if he says it works, do it. fine, do it. But above and beyond that minimal amount is personal gifts. You know, a guy's a fly fisherman, you send him a book on fly fishing. I think that's great. I think it's customized. The more customized it is, the better. The more, because these things that he sends are generally very personal, you know. So it's nice. You only have so much time, and to send everybody a gift, I think, has less impact than a note, a special part, and he sends a handwritten note with everything. You know, a handwritten note with something on fly fishing is more important than sending golf balls to people that don't play golf, you know. So.
What about the birthday card?
It's a funny thing. You know, I send a, I don't think I'd send a birthday card unless I sent a personal note. I get a birthday card from my team with everybody signing it, and I appreciate it. But if they sent me a personal note, I'd appreciate it a lot more. So I don't know. I mean, that's...
Okay. We had one client of ours that says about 20,000 in revenue that we, in the past, had sponsored an event of his that for his nonprofit. So we, I think we sponsored like $1,500. And then shortly thereafter, he came back to us again with an ask. I think it was like, what, $2,500 or another $1,500? Like, shortly thereafter. And our response to him was, you know, unfortunately, our marketing budget has already been committed for this year. You know, thank you for thinking of us, and we might want to support a marketing effort in the future. But he came right back around and asked, well, can you sponsor per kid? And we're kind of in a tough place because I don't know if the client realizes that this is not like Morgan Stanley, the firm. This is our individual team's like contributions per paycheck. But how would you handle that?
So he has how much money with you guys? About 10 million? No.
No.
He got 5 million.
Under 5.
Yeah, he's got 1.5 million with us.
Another two.
Yeah, and then maybe another 2 million outside of us.
I'd probably ask him for the other 2 million and then sponsor.
Yes.
I mean, do you think it's worth explaining to him how it works? Like in terms of, like, I don't think the clients understand, like, that it's not our big firm that has endless amounts of pockets that are contributing.
No, I wouldn't bother with that. They don't care. I think you take advantage of, you go to the event, you meet people. I get an introduction while I was at the event. I meet as many people as I could, and I open up $2 million accounts.
Yeah, I don't even think that one was for us to go. It was just to sponsor these kids to go on some trip.
No, that was an award ceremony, but they're all like low-income kids from public schools. It's like an award banquet for like inner city youth.
Okay.
So it's a good thing, but it's you know, you get some FPL folks who show up and not a big
deal. Yeah, I put them on a budget.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put them on a budget and say, you know, this is, you know, I'd wait for them to ask. And then I'd say, this is our budget. We budgeted this much for you this year. And then I'd say, we really believe in what you're doing. You're doing a terrific job. Congratulations. It's wonderful. But this is how much we can give. And he'll be fine. He'll be fine. He's a fundraiser. He's trying to get money. So you just tell him what you can give. And you give him $1,500 a year or whatever. just make that part of your budget. You make a budget every year of donations. And you should. You think of what business doesn't have a marketing budget. I mean, what business says, we don't have a marketing budget. That's crazy. You should have a marketing budget.
We have one, and just this year is going to be the tightest out of all the years going forward because of the transition.
Well, just,
not a good year.
And you just say that to them. Look, you know, we're in a transition, and this is a tight year for us. So our budget is this. He'll understand. I mean, he's a good guy. He's helping these kids. He's a good guy.
Okay.
Yeah. He's not the this guy is not the enemy, okay?
Right.
Yeah, this is one of the good guys. He's a good person. It, you know what? It's probably a really good thing he's doing, and you should feel good about helping him. Okay? Yeah. You should make, yeah. All right, guys, so here's what I want you to do. Make a list of your centers of influence. And just like you're knocking off your accounts with the folders, start knocking off these CPAs or, you know, realtors or whoever. But get me some progress in terms of centers of influence. I want some activity on that side of things. It's fine for me to explain this to you, but if you don't take action, I can't help you. You got to go and take the action, and then get me the feedback, and then I can coach you.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's the key. We got to get action, because that's what I'm. That's, you know, I can teach you how to do it, but if you don't do it, then you know you got to go out. And we're going to learn to play tennis. We're going to go hit balls, and then we're going to go out and play a few matches. And then we can get some feedback. Okay?
Yep.
All right. Well, have fun. It's exciting. Scare the hell out of yourself a little bit. You'll have fun.
Thanks,
see ya. All right. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.